Today's program has been brought to you by Whole Foods Market, a dynamic leader in the quality food business, a mission-driven company that aims to set the standards of excellence for food retailers. For more information, visit WholeFoodsMarket.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit HeritageRadioNetwork.org for thousands more.
Thanks for tuning in. You're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.org. We're in the studio here in Bushwick in the back of Roberta's. This is Sari Kamen. And I'm in the studio today with my old pal, Greg Drzezinski. Hi, Greg.
Hello.
Hello. Thank you so much for coming. You may know Greg because he was most recently on ABC on the show The Taste. He did very well, in fact.
Why, thank you.
You're welcome. So The Taste is a cooking competition show, and you had Anthony Bourdain as a judge, and Brian Mullarkey, and home cook Nigella Lawson, and your personal team captain, chef, was Chef Ludo.
Chef Ludo, yep.
Holler at you, Team Ludo.
Team Ludo, forever and ever.
So the whole concept was the judges had to taste the food on a spoon, but they didn't know who was making it. So it was a blind taste every time.
Right. Blind taste.
Okay. So they picked you because they tasted your food and they loved how it tasted, even though they didn't know you and your background, and they had no idea if you were a home chef, right.
Yeah, it was supposed to be like the voice for cooking.
Ah, okay. So what was the first thing you gave them that they tasted? And they loved you forever.
I made lobster bisque, but I did it like Thai style. So instead of doing any dairy, I used coconut milk. The aromatics were like galangal, lemongrass, kaffir lime, etc. And but other than that, I did it in a lobster bisque style. Served it with lobster and just a little fresh garnish. And very simple. That was it.
That sounds good. So actually, before we get like rolling into more stuff about The Taste, because I do want to talk about it, I want to back it up for a minute. Because you were one of those cooks on The Taste that actually had a lot of professional experience. Mm. So why don't you tell me like when you started cooking? And, you know, I know you've been a Saucier, a La Bernardine, and you went through International Culinary Center, and you're most recently been an instructor, so you've got a lot of history in the kitchen. So how did that all start for you?
Well, we're from the same town, right? From Cleveland, Ohio.
Hey.
Yeah. So
Cleveland rocks.
So I started cooking there when I was 15. I mean, you know, you got to get a job when you get your license, after school, whatever it is. I started as a prep cook, and there's actually some really amazing restaurants in Cleveland, but I worked, you know, in a bunch of them, starting out as a prep cook, washing oysters, you know, helping with dishes, peeling garlic.
Do you remember where your first restaurant was?
Yeah, the first restaurant was called Sina Copa.
I don't even know that.
Yeah, well, it was in Cleveland Heights. It was on Lee Road. Yeah, it was cool. It was very forward for Cleveland dining. It was fine dining, and
it must have been too fancy for my family at the time.
Yeah, I mean, it was cool. It was good exposure. I saw what like a real chef's life looked like. There was no glitz at the time. There weren't like a lot of celebrity chefs, so it was just, you know, seeing what the real cooking life was about, which was about, you know, drinking and partying after work. That's what I saw. And
when you were 15?
You don't have to wake up till noon, and then you just stumble into work. No one's judging you. You know, you just rock it out. And then,
except you had to go to middle school.
Right. So I'd be a little foggy during class most of the days, but it was fun. It was good.
So did that make you want to be a chef or a cook? Or was that just kind of like a job at the time?
Well, you know, when you grow up, I guess, in Cleveland in the suburbs at that time, you know, most of the people I was going to school with, I want to be a lawyer or a doctor or a fireman. And once I got a taste of what the lifestyle was like and that you got to eat all this awesome food and just be around people that could swear and do whatever they wanted and they weren't judged, I was like, oh, I fit right in. This is perfect for me.
That is really cool. I mean, because, you know, I grew up in a Cleveland suburb as well. We were Nabes. And, you know, it wasn't a foodie town. It wasn't like growing up in New York where, you know, you had a different restaurant to try every night. Or, like, you know, your parents are always talking about the newest place. So the fact that you sort of cultivated a sense of appreciation for, like, good food at that time is...
Yeah.
It's not... I mean, it's impressive, and it's just an awareness that most young people didn't have, at least living in that part of the country.
Yeah, I mean... My real exposure was also eating the food. You know, I lived at home. It was just my father and I. So it was either I cooked, and most of the stuff I cooked was like nachos that came out of a microwave with, you know, bacon on them, or, you know, a George Foreman grilled burger. So it was either something like that, or oftentimes, you know, he'd just be like, let's go out and eat. You know, I'll just take you out. So, you know, I was eating out a lot, even when I was like 13, 14, just my father and I. And so I think that influenced me just as much, because, you know, it's not like I moved to New York and I'm like, oh, I'm eating out for the first time. It was always kind of a part of my life to eat out, check out different food, and then I'd go home and try to recreate what they did.
Yeah. So you already had a pretty sophisticated palate at a young age, even before you were like older and could appreciate different kinds of food.
I mean, it was meat and potatoes. I wouldn't call it, I mean, at that time also it was like wasabi mashed potatoes. So I wouldn't say it was super sophisticated, but I definitely, you know, knew how I thought food should taste.
Uh-huh.
I knew what well-seasoned food tastes like.
Yeah. Okay, so then what happened? You worked at that restaurant. You kind of did everything.
Yeah, I worked there. Even though I wasn't getting paid, I did get fired after 3 months for smoking pot in the basement.
I thought you would get a promotion for that from the way it sounded.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the chef was kind of responsible for me, so he's like, I'm not letting this little kid get me in trouble. So then after that, I went over. I was a prep cook at a place called Moxie. You know that place?
Do you remember Moxie? Yeah.
So I was there for probably half a year for the opening. They had a huge prep kitchen. So I was doing like a lot of cool stuff, roasting chickens, making mashed potatoes. You know, they even showed me some butchering stuff. By this time, I'm like 16. That was super cool as well. I still go back there when I go to Cleveland and get food there, and it's still pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's great.
Okay, so then...
So after that, I worked in yet another restaurant, now Giovanni's.
Sounds familiar.
Yeah, that's like a super... it's as fine dining as it gets in Cleveland, Ohio, an Italian restaurant. They gave me my own station, so I'm working garde-manger 3 days a week, and then... You know, I was 16, about between 16 turning 17. I worked garde-manger, and I also did some pastry work there. So I worked there for another time, and I stayed there pretty much until at that point as well, the high school I was going to offered a culinary school program. So instead of going to regular school, you would do your traditional English and math classes. And then instead of electives, what most people take, I went to a vocational cooking school.
And then did you leave Cleveland after that?
I stayed. And then once I graduated, I moved to Amherst, Massachusetts for college, for undergraduate.
Okay. What did you study there?
I studied restaurant management.
Oh, okay.
I had a couple friends that were going to school there. It seemed like a rad town. I felt like, hey, I've already been to culinary school. You know, I know all the basics, so I'll just go to restaurant management. I'm going to be 22 when I graduate, and I'm going to open a restaurant. You know, it shows how little I knew at mm-hmm. that point. You know, you're just you're so ignorant when you're young, or at least I was.
I think we all are. But yeah. It's good to have a vision, and it's good to have a sense of self. And
yeah.
Yeah. So what kind of restaurant did you envision yourself opening at that time?
I mean... You know, you see chefs cooking, and then you see a restaurant busy, and you think, I can do this when you're young. And as the more you learn, the more you realize it's a lot more to it than that. So that's what I was learning at that point. While I was in college, I was a sous chef I started as a line cook, and then I was a sous chef at a pretty small restaurant in Amherst, Massachusetts. It was a restaurant that was also fine dining. It was like a lot of seared rare tuna, you know, stuff like that. Yeah. That was like what was hot at the time. And the chef there was really awesome, and he kind of worked with everybody. And it was the first time I had a chef that spent time with you that was like a great teacher.
Mm-hmm.
And he encouraged all the cooks to put stuff on the menu. And then it was tiny, though. This place was like 30 seats, but delicious. Mm-hmm. The food was good. So I did that while I was getting my undergraduate. And once I graduated, I was catering a party at someone's house. They had a grill. And on the menu, I put, I was going to do this grilled cod dish. Going to make grilled cod. And I had, like, you know, a bunch of people to feed. And I fire up the grill. It's hot. You know, I take the cod, season it, oil it, and I put it on the grill. And it's like the main course, mind you. And I try to get the cod off the grill, and it just starts falling into a million pieces.
Oh, no.
And just broke all over the grill. So I'm about to graduate college. You know, I'm a sous chef. I'm like, I don't know how to cook. I realized I didn't know how to cook. I'm like, you know, I think I need to go back and go to culinary school. That was I'll never forget that. It was really embarrassing.
Yeah, it sounds like it.
Yeah, it was terrible. So after that, I moved down to New York. This is about 10 years ago at this point. I moved down to New York City and enrolled at the French Culinary Institute.
Right. So you struggled a little bit before you entered culinary school, but then, I mean, I guess your learning curve probably wasn't as great as it seemed like it would be, because you've been amazingly successful in a really short amount of time, like just from where you started to, you know, where you are now, like working at Le Bernardin at a really young age. How did you become associate at Le Bernardin?
Well, I mean, first let me address the success thing. I mean, it depends how you measure success. I mean, I try to be pretty hard on myself as far as like what my accomplishments are. I don't really think I've really done too much for my age. I've jumped around a lot, which is not really to my benefit. Although you get to see a lot of food, it's very difficult to progress when you move around so much.
You're being very humble.
No, I'm being
which may
honest.
Surprise viewers of the taste, but
no, I'm being
but
honest.
But you have already been a teacher. You've already been an instructor at the school that you studied at not that long ago.
Right. Well, essentially, you know, you move around a lot, and then you get to a point where you're like, you know what, I want to buckle down and do something. And, you know, at the point I started working at Le Bernardin, I mean, I was very honored that they even hired me at that point. I'd already been around a bunch of places. I was about 26 by then. So I'd worked for Batali for a few years at Lupa and Casamono. You know, I'd done some traveling. And I went to Le Bernardin. And basically, when you go there, it's like, you know, take your ego, leave it at the door. You're working garmanger. Doesn't matter who you are. You know, you're working garmanger. It also doesn't matter what you already know. So you might have been a sous chef somewhere else, or you might have done this. You come to Le Bernardin to, like, check it at the door, to learn the proper way to do things, learn their system, and work every station, you know, work as many as you can, and, you know, just cook beautiful food. That's what it's all about there.
So that must have served you well on the taste when it was, you know, check everything out the door. We're not being judged on our backgrounds, but just our taste.
Yeah. I mean, it did, you know, it did. I don't think, you know, all the other things, the taste, whatever, I think really my biggest accomplishment for Get Saucier is just being in that kitchen and working with those guys. I mean, it was a great point in my career. You know,
was that your most influential point in your career in terms of developing your own style and your own techniques?
I mean, own style and techniques, yes, I learned things, but it's about the discipline it teaches there. You know, you show up early, you're responsible for your food. If you bring something up and the chefs taste it and they don't like it, it's your fault. You don't blame other people. You just go in there and you shut up and you work. And no matter who you are, like, it does instill that in you. You step in there and it's like game time. So I'm very grateful for that education.
Yeah. And, you know, obviously Chef Repair, he has a French culinary background, and he's a very He's a very humble person. He's very in touch with his environment. He's a Buddhist. He was on Heritage Radio Network a few weeks ago talking about his career. And then on The Taste, you had Chef Ludo, who was probably the opposite of that in a lot of ways to work with. Or at least what we saw on TV. He was very vocal. Right. He was very involved. And he was like a ball of energy. What was the difference between working with Chef Repair and then working with Chef Ludo?
I mean, honestly, you know, the thing about Chef Repair is that he is what, you know, he appears to be. He's amazing, you know. I mean, this guy, he's done so much, but he still makes it into the kitchen to taste the food every day. He's so compassionate with everybody he works with. The level of respect he has for even, you know, the dishwashers and everybody. It's like you see a lot of these chefs on TV, and it's like they're not really like that, but he is really like that. He embodies everything he talks about. So, I mean, he's the man, period. But Ludo's also that way. I mean, Ludo is incredibly talented, and anything you see on TV, that's just the way they edit it.
Right.
Period. You know, they just...
We should probably... This is a good time to say the same goes for you.
Right. I mean, it doesn't matter... You know, it doesn't matter what you do on the show. They pretty much have an idea of how they want you to look or how they want you to be portrayed. I mean, yes, you did those things, but so did everybody else.
Yeah.
But then, you know, they figure out who's the easiest guy to whatever, and, you know, that's how they edit it.
Yeah.
You could have an hour conversation talking about all the great things that happened. You say one negative thing, that's what's going on.
Yeah, and then you're, like, the negative guy on the show.
That's right.
You know, in a lot of ways, you were painted like that, except... Yeah. It also seemed like everyone was kind of jealous of you.
I mean, I don't know. I don't know. I mean, the way it was edited was, it is what it is, you know? I mean, I own the way I behaved, which can be construed however you want, confidence, cockiness, me being very, what it really was me being very nervous and insecure about what was going on and the way I dealt with it, you know? And a lot of times in the interviews, I would have been very hard on myself, and they took that and used it as a way of me, like, just talking shit, really.
Yeah.
Excuse my language.
You're excused.
Thank you.
So how did you end up on The Taste?
So at the International Culinary Center, they have a lot of guest chef demos. And the International Culinary Center, after La Bernardin, I went to teach there. And it was, again, just a very amazing opportunity to be able to work with everybody there. You know, some of the chefs have a little bit of a more old school method approach to teaching. And I think that they were possibly wanting to showcase some of the newer styles of communication and cooking. You know, I was a teacher there, so they offered me the opportunity to make kind of a press packet, which involved like a YouTube video, some demo stuff, a little information about me. We began to send that around for people that were looking for, you know, stuff on TV, interviews, whatever it was, PR for the school. I got a cold call. It got sent in, I believe, and I got called about The Taste. It was, they called me, you know, I was interested immediately because of Bourdain, really. He's also one of those people that, you know, he embodies what he talks about. Yeah. I was really impressed with him. You know, he's not just some guy that goes on TV and talks, oh, this, that, blah, 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 and then he's a different person. He's just consistently, just an awesome, amazing food guy.
Yeah, I was really impressed with him, too, and I was actually really, I don't know, just kind of, like, touched. Like, he seemed so genuinely invested in, like, you know, everyone. He was really upset when people got sent home. He really seemed to care. And he took people under his wing in a way that, you know, not necessarily the other chefs did. And he was also, like, not a lot of drama going on with him. Mm-hmm. You know, like Malarkey and Ludo were always fighting, and then, you know, like Nigella had her quips. And Bourdain was always kind of like, I'm here for the food.
Yeah. I mean, I really can't say enough good stuff about the guy. I mean, he was just fair and diplomatic and took time to talk with everybody, and just a genuinely happy, brilliant person. That's how I feel about him.
And he didn't initially pick you to be on his team, but then he did say, you know, publicly that he regretted that.
Well, I will say, you know, you can you have to look at the way it was edited, but you know, that was one of the things. People were very confused about the show because they didn't understand the way it was edited. You know, things seemed to happen that didn't make sense, and that went to the editing.
Yeah. And is that just because, you know, that's how TV is, and it's a reality show, but it's...
I don't know why it was edited the way it was. Yeah. It just was. But,
Is that going back in part to, you think, you know, the producers sort of superimposed personalities that they wanted to, people to be more consistent with, and they edited it accordingly?
I don't know. I've thought about it a lot, and who knows in the end, you know, what goes on back there, what decisions are being made, the reasons they do things. I mean, I think from a bottom line, when you look at everything that's going on, it's all business, and everything needs to make money. And that can be the driving force.
The ratings.
Behind, ratings, what people want to see. You know, there's a lot of research that goes into all this stuff. So you have to believe that that's the driving force. When you eat at a restaurant, you're thinking, you know, why is this like this? Well, it's because money.
Yeah.
Ratings. So, you know, who really knows?
Yeah. I mean, I've known you for a long time. I mean, really since we were... like 12 and 13 years old, I've known you.
Yeah.
And I've been in school, grad school with you before, and, you know, we know each other, we have a lot of friends in common, and I've always known you to be a really gracious person. I mean, you're very spiritual, and you're very into yoga, and you have a lot of respect and commitment for the environment and for animal cruelty, and you really, you know, you practice what you preach. And it was surprising to me to see you sort of like put in a box on TV as someone who is a little more aggressive, who's a little bit more narcissistic.
Right.
And I know you're confident about your food, as you should be.
Yeah.
But never in a way, you know, where you would sacrifice any relationships with other people to get to the top. And, you know, even though you didn't necessarily do anything on the show that, you know, you could call you out for, it seemed like other people's reactions, they were responding to you as if you were a little more calculated than you are.
Yeah, I mean, I'll be honest, you know, it was like, I'm pretty sensitive, so I was shocked, and I was like really upset about it, especially, you know, with all the social media, I have like literally more Twitter haters than followers. Like, people just...
You guys, like, don't hate. Greg is the bomb.
Yeah. But, no, it's all good fun. I mean, you know, it is what it is. You know, you gotta just, you gotta harness whatever happened in the past and move on and accept that, you know, it's your decision to go on these shows and do what you did, and they can do whatever they want.
Yeah, it's always the risk you take.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so is there anything you want to say, like, since you have this opportunity, you know, because here at Heritage Radio Network, we have about 5 billion listeners probably tuning in right now. So now that you have all of America listening to you, is there anything that you'd want to tell us that you didn't feel like you got to convey while you were on The Taste? Or just a little, you know, insight into the show so we have a better understanding of what was really going on?
I mean, I would get more into depth with that, but I don't want to get sued. So I'm going to go ahead and leave that one alone.
Okay. Fair enough. And Greg, you came in fourth, so you did pretty awesome.
Oh, yeah, I guess. Yeah. I mean, I don't want to take away from anybody else. There was a lot of...
See, this is what I'm talking about, people.
Well, I don't want to take away from anybody else. There was a lot of, like, super talented people that were there just for the audition phase that are tremendously accomplished, and they got, you know, beat out, that have restaurants that do tasting menus that are really well regarded, amazing stuff, and, you know, they didn't make it because of X, Y, and Z. So, You know, one thing is, I guess it was... Yeah, I'm going to go ahead and stay away from that. Let's move on.
Okay. So real quick, we don't have that much more time, but I want to hit on Adobe real quick.
Abode.
Yep.
It's Abode.
Sorry about that. I'm dyslexic.
No, it's all right.
Okay, so you had a quick... You did a pop-up restaurant.
I did. Sarah Ashley and I. Sarah is the beautiful girl that was on my team, and we met.
Also one of the finalists, number
yeah,
three.
Yeah, she came in third, and she's tremendously talented. We met on the show, and we just became really good friends on the show, and spent a lot of time talking about food, talking about our visions for food, things we wanted to do. Unfortunately, at the time, she lived in Florida, and so we were just like, oh, it's just, that would be really cool, but it's never going to happen. But, you know, we went through so much together on the show. When we were done, you know, she's like, well, I think I'm going to come up to New York and check it out for a little bit. And she came up here, and we landed up doing a pop-up restaurant together and landed up dating and being together. And it's been really amazing and really intense.
Wow. Well, yeah. Yeah, Sarah was awesome on the show.
Yeah, she was amazing. I mean, one thing about Sarah is, like, a lot of people were like, oh, she, you know, she didn't have the technique or the skills. But one thing about Sarah that was awesome is she always tastes her food. And she always makes sure everything tastes amazing.
Yeah.
And every week at the pop-up restaurant, we did a different concept every week for about 8 weeks. People, time after time, would be like, who made this? This is the best thing we had. And 9 times out of 10, it would be something Sarah made.
Wow.
Whether it was like the focaccia or one of her desserts, her food just like tastes really good. And a lot of it is, you know, when you're a chef, you kind of want to get stuff done. You rush things. But a home cook, you know, they're used to tasting the food and taking their time and doing the right thing. And, you know, really, she cooks from the heart. So,
yeah. And she always was smiling. And that was my favorite thing about Sarah on the show. She never got really flustered. She never lost her temper. She was like cool as a cucumber the whole time.
Well, that's really who Sarah is. I mean, she's always happy and she's tremendously talented. And her food's great, and she's got a really bright career.
And her hair and makeup was always perfect, even though she was cooking, and I don't understand how that happened.
Well, she doesn't need much makeup, you know? She, like, they would...
Oh.
Yeah. You know, she's just naturally beautiful, and also, you know, yeah, I mean, it was just really,
yeah. Well,
really
everyone
easy to
loved
be around
Abode,
her.
And it did awesome, so we hope for more of that in the future.
Yeah.
But what are you doing right now? Show's over.
Yes.
The boat is over.
Yeah, so the show's over. Had to move on to something a little bit more stable than a boat. I mean, doing a pop-up restaurant for a couple days a week isn't exactly full-time work. Just looking at primarily two different restaurant kitchen spaces right now. One in Chinatown and one more in the Gramercy area. And just trying to figure out what is the best move and time-wise, which is the most effective.
Okay. Cool. Yeah. Anything else you want to tell us?
I think that about covers it.
All right. Okay. Well, thank you, Greg. It's been awesome to
see
you and have you in the studio. Check us out, heritageradionetwork.org. Listen to all of our radio interviews and programs as podcasts on iTunes and Stitcher Radio. Thanks for listening. Have a good day.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.